Hey, good day, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the OIG Roundtable. I am Eric Rubenstein, Senior Director of Litigation, Fraud, Waste, Abuse Support, and I am joined by my two partners in crime, Wade McFall, the retired Assistant Special Agent Charge from the LA Field Office Manager, now on our SIU investigative team, and Matt Kachansky, retired Special Agent Charge from the OIG, and the now retired UPIC Northeast Director, and now our Payment Integrity Director. So we want to talk today about a topic that we have spoken about many times. I actually got a message from somebody on LinkedIn a couple of weeks ago who works over at a plan, is a documentation auditor, CPC, CPMA kind of person, and wrote me a fairly lengthy message on LinkedIn talking about the importance of understanding that LCDs, local coverage decisions, NCDs, national coverage determinations, and Medicare rules and regulations as far as payment are only applicable to Medicare. They are not applicable to commercial, and they may not be applicable to Medicaid. And the fact that if a plan chooses to adopt them, that you have to, you know, go and do the research. But that is very important to understand that because the government says something is or is not covered, it only applies to Medicare. There are caveats. There may be instances where Congress passes a law to provide certain levels of healthcare coverage to people regardless, like the Affordable Care Act included certain wellness visits and things of that sort, which are not going to be necessarily relegated down to what Medicare covers or not. So we're not really talking about some of these nuanced things that come out. We're talking about, you know, more in the global sense of NCDs, LCDs, and the like. And so, you know, Wade, let's start with you, because it starts, you know, we're really focusing here on the payer side, non-Medicare traditional. We're talking about, you know, in the Medicare Advantage space, you have to follow the Medicare rules. So it's not even really even there. It's really on the commercial side, which is, you know, a lot of you listen in and tune into our podcast where we talk about this from the SIU perspective. And Wade, it always starts from an investigator's perspective, payment integrity. And when we talk about it now, we really want people to start thinking about the mindset of payment integrity, not as a bifurcated group of people, meaning the fraud people, the SIU, and the waste and abuse, the kind of payment integrity. We want to think more in terms of program integrity or greater payment integrity that hits across the F, the W, and the A. But it always will start, Wade, right? It's knowing what's the guidance. Talk a little bit about where do you go to get that guidance? Where do you go to identify where the policies are going to be that you're going to follow? Because this is where it starts. So anybody who thinks anything differently, it always has to start with a couple of key things. So Wade, go ahead.
Yeah, and I think one of the things you pointed out earlier was important too, that not only does the CMS, Medicare policy not necessarily apply to others other than the federal government and Medicare, but a lot of times people consider CMS like the ACO would say the gold standard. So they base a lot of their stuff on CMS policy and regulations. That doesn't mean you follow it because it's CMS policy, but a lot of the regulations somewhat mirror what CMS puts out in the coding manuals and the, as you said, the NCDs and the LCDs, but you still have to follow whatever, you know, the payer's regulations are. And you pointed out another important point is you have to look at it as like a slice in time. Whether you're looking at these certain codes, you have to know what the regulations were at that time. And it could be that they changed a week later, or theoretically even a day later. So you have a slice in time that could be a day, a couple days. If you're looking at a very small time frame, it could be a 5-year period, but you have to know what the regulations said at that time. If they did change, you have to know when they changed, what did the regulations change to? And now you might have, for example, if you're doing like a probe sample, that's a 5-year period and the regulations change somewhere in the middle, now you really have two separate investigations. And maybe if it's a probe sample, you can change your sample just to, you know, one or the other. You know, I'm not saying that everything is so black and white that it's just one issue, but if either the unchanged policy or the changed policy fits into your sample, you can work just that side of it. And having said that, you have to be careful, of course, that if the regulations allowed something before and now they do not, so it used to be legal the way they're doing it and now it's not, that's one thing. But it's also, you have to look at it in the reverse of that. If it was allowed before, I don't know, I'm getting it confused now, but it's not, now it's legal and before right. It wasn't. So you're looking at your sample time frame in that slice right. of time, but you have to be cognizant of that. But it's really a matter of pulling out the claims that you're looking at in this slice in time and making sure you know what the regulations were there and adjust your investigation accordingly as to how they change in the middle of that.
Right. You know, and first and foremost, Wade, we're, for your birthday, we're getting you a bottle of Prevagen so you can get your, keep your memory sharp as a tack. I don't think it's covered, but you know, we have to, but you know, Wade, the point you bring up, which is kind of interesting, is if there was a change in policy and something that maybe was a prohibited thing to bill, item, service, or procedure, but is now covered, you really have to think about, is the juice worth the squeeze? Is right. it worth the effort, you know, over a three-year period, that if two of those 3 years, the item, service, or procedure was not covered, but is now covered, the jury appeal for a case like that is trash, right? Yeah. We all agree with that. And while from the SIU perspective, it's not our job to make a determination about whether something has good jury appeal, that's a legal strategy or legal determination, it certainly does weigh into when you are presenting this to someone about, you know, if you're looking to try to collect an overpayment, how vociferous are you going to be in your efforts to make an attempt to collect an overpayment on something that yesterday was a prohibited practice, but today is an embraced practice? And I think that that's a metric when you're vetting a case and when you're investigating a case, you've got to take that into consideration. It's a very important piece of the puzzle that oftentimes gets overlooked, because there can be instances when something was not covered and then it becomes covered. Now, obviously, the problem is going to be, is the provider misrepresenting the item, service, or procedure? Are there what we would call maybe plus factors that change that metric, change our mindset, or something else that comes in? But, you know, what you say about it starts with that, the contract. Where in time is that provider with respect to how they're supposed to bill? It's probably one of the most important pieces. You can't just go and pull up an organizational policy and say, this provider is committing an act of fraud, waste, or abuse, suspected, whatever it may be, because the plan policy says this and the provider is doing that. What if there was some wacky carve out where this provider was told to follow CMS guidance over something else? Now, that's rare, but you know, it can happen. It's similar to instances where two providers of the same type of specialty might have very different things in their contracts. One provider might have negotiated to be able to bill for certain things, and another provider might not have been allowed to bill for those certain things. Those are assessments you have to make about, are you going to proceed when you've got kind of differing opinions? So, you know, Matt, this parlays right into that piece of the puzzle from that managerial perspective and kind of that overall kind of program integrity. You know, we're doing a lot more of these SIU payer payment integrity kind of scorecards. And, you know, not that I want to make this a salesy thing for us here at Advise, but we look at these from a very different perspective. You know, we have all worked in the world of law enforcement, but also that OIG, very different, criminal, civil, administrative. And now in our second half of our lives, and for you, third half of your life, it's, you know,
certainly
the back nine, you know, but you've had parts of it where you started off where it was criminal, civil, administrative, then it was on the UPIC side, heavy administrative portion, heavy civil, and now working kind of, you know, in that a little bit of everything, depending upon what it is. And one of the things that we look at when we are doing these scorecards is we're looking at, obviously, volumes of cases, we're looking at thresholds, we're looking at things, but also seeing like, where are the gaps when you've got providers who have different contracts within the same thing. But, you know, it all gets down to LCDs, NCDs, and policies are all specific to Medicare. And the biggest thing is that when you are on the payer side, it's understanding what are you following, but also knowing that if you are working in an environment where you are working with LCDs and NCDs and things of that sort, it really isn't. While we love to say that CMS is the gold standard because it's the largest sort of healthcare insurance in the world, it is not without its own problems, the least of which are inconsistencies that exist within LCDs and things of that sort. And that creates it creates areas for improvement from the payer side, but it also means from a managerial perspective, you've got to kind of, you know, make sure that the investigators are applying the right policy at the right time period for the right allegations.
Correct. Yeah. Let me try and get into all of that. But as an investigator, as someone that manages the CPCs, to do the audits, you know, the first thing you've got to get for any plan when you're doing an investigation is the provider manual. Yeah. That's going to tell you the language of their policies and regulations. And it could be that they'll have some policies in the provider manual, but they might have the overall language of, if we don't have a specific policy on something, we follow CMS. So you've got to look for that type of language in the provider manual. But with we ask for a contract with the provider for every case, because there may be, as you said, carve-outs, special circumstances where a specific provider is allowed to do certain things. And I'll give an example right now. We were looking at an optometrist, or I'm sorry, an audiologist. And we look at his billing, and he's billing for full hearing exams, but only providing a screening. And above that, he's getting paid by the plan a lot more for the full exam than what's on their fee schedule. So we don't know why. We find out that all of these services were provided at a health fair put on by the plan, and they had a special contract with him to pay him for these services at that rate and allowed him to bill that. So without that contract, without the relationship with that side of the plan, which is one of the things we talk about in the scorecard, is having a good relationship with all the arms of the plan to make sure that these things are all covered and that there's communication. Yeah, we'd be opening, you know, we'd be going forward with a case where there's no legs to it, because at the end, the plan allowed them to do it. So, you know, so there's minutia within all of it, but it starts with the provider manual, the contracts, the CPT manual itself, you know, tells the provider what they need to do and what they need to document to get something paid, above and beyond any policy, any regulation. If they don't document it the way it's supposed to be, they're not going to get paid for it, or shouldn't be paid. But you're right. The LCDs, you know, if it is Medicare, there is no one Medicare, you know, all-in-one policy or anything like that. They break it down in some instances by the local rules that the local MACs, the Medicare Administrative Contractors, create these rules, these LCDs. And in some instances, one MAC will have one. Another MAC may not, or may have one in complete contradiction to it. It's all up to those MACs based on their local circumstances. They, you know, there might be a specific population that needs something that they have this LCD for, and things right. like that. And it makes
so,
it
and that's and Matt, difficult. I don't interrupt you, but that becomes an important part, because, you know, oftentimes in these conversations with people, we're asked, or, you know, conversations will come up where someone will say, if Medicare is a national program, why are there differing policies? And that's really the point. You could have a MAC in a jurisdiction where there's a particular cultural population of people who might have a very unique health condition that is cultural or ethnic. And so that MAC might need to have a specific policy on coverage for something that other MACs might not need. You know, unfortunately, the problem becomes instances where the same CPT code for the same item, service, or procedure where you've got competing LCDs for nothing other than the fact that the medical director of that MAC chooses to cover it or not cover it or what have you. And we were just talking about, and I'll let you get back in a second, but we were just talking about instances where we've worked cases where there were competing LCDs. And I think, you know, Wade, it gets back to you. You got to look and see, is the juice worth the squeeze on that? If you've got competing LCDs, the question is going to be, is that an investigation that's worth working on? Even if, for example, you're only in a region where that other LCD isn't applicable. But, you know, Matt, go back. I didn't mean to interrupt too much, but it becomes an important piece of that puzzle.
I'll give a really good example of the confusion that type of thing can cause is the, you know, for the UPIC Northeast, we had both New York and New Jersey within our jurisdiction, two different MACs. Providers would, you know, sometimes they're on, you know, they're in New York City. They also have an office in Newark or, you know, in, you know, Jersey City, completely different sets of rules for some things in those two offices. So we would see instances where, you know, the patients would be seen in one office or the other, based on what was covered by the LCDs in that particular jurisdiction. And we'd be like, this looks wrong, but it's all within the rules that were established by those two separate MACs. It makes it difficult for the provider to keep track of that and send the people to the right places. And I can do this here, but I can't do it over there. And you know, for an investigator or a prosecutor or anyone adjudicating these things, it is a maze of problems that it completely ruins the strength of any case. But again, going back to this, you know, there is a hierarchy of guidance, you know, provider manuals, the contracts to see if there's anything out of the ordinary there, CPT manual. And then it moves up as if things are unaddressed or there's language in the provider manual, then it's the, you know, Medicaid regulations for that particular state, if it's a Medicaid, and then CMS, if there's no policies and there's language in the contract that if nothing else applies, right, then it's CMS. So you have to follow that hierarchy till you get to the right policy at the right time, covering the right services.
Right. And, you know, we've had some instances where I've looked at some of our some of the Medicaid plans that we deal with, and you look at the provider agreement, and it says very clearly, for the purposes of submitting claims for reimbursement, you will follow CMS's policies, you know, NCDs, all these. And it's clear, you see it, they're telling you what to follow. You see that oftentimes where states have maybe gaps in policies. I know that there was a period of time where New Jersey and the fee-for-service world, they had no policies. They had none. It all defaulted to CMS. And then if you were in one of the MCOs, the MCO contracts all said you will follow CMS guidance. So you have to go that route. That's why looking that provider manual and number one investigative step, you can argue anything that you want. But at the end of the day, you've got to know what's the thing that you're looking to identify as your source of truth, right? We always speak about the source of truth. It's a big auditing piece of the puzzle. What's the document that's the source of truth? Is it a manual? Is it the contract? Whatever that source of truth is, which is why it is important that investigators have access to things outside of just billing histories and, you know, network agreements necessarily. That's why the SIU teams need to have that cross functionality and work with the greater payment integrity. We talked last week about EFT fraud, electronic funds transfer frauds, and we talked about the fact that that's a function of finance. That crossover is a very important piece of the puzzle. So yeah, I think, look, the takeaway as we wrap up here is that Medicare rules are for Medicare. Medicare rules are not for private payers or commercial payers, and that when we talk about something that crosses into the commercial space, for example, when the Affordable Care Act creates policy regarding coverage or Congress changes a law that includes coverage on a national level, that is not Medicare. That is across the spectrum. And so when we're talking about things in the Federal Register, NCDs, LCDs, They are not applicable by default to commercial payers. They become applicable when a commercial payer chooses to include it as a policy. Oftentimes, the commercial payers will come up with their own policies that may mirror, but may also be different. Oftentimes, the commercial payers are keeping the same policies because why reinvent the wheel? And if you're working at a commercial payer that has a Medicare Advantage line of business, you have to have the same policies anyway. But it is not uncommon for there to be separate policies out there. California is a great example. MedCal has a huge directory of policies that are entirely separate from CMS. So you must understand where those policies are and understand, you know, where that interplay is. So, you know, I hope we cleared some of this up and kind of explained it. You should be making sure, number one thing, right, as Wade said, apply the right policy at the right time. You know, if you're applying a policy that is not the right one or you don't think is the right one, get clarification. Particularly, we see this a lot during the public health emergency. We were seeing a lot of policy confusion. And if there wasn't a policy that was sunset or something like that, so just know it. And that's why having teams of auditors who are conversant in these things really does help you from that investigative perspective. So it was a great topic. We love getting questions like this because they really do lead to really robust conversations about these kind of things because they really are the nuanced pieces of the puzzle, not so much about how to investigate a fraud, waste, abuse case, but kind of lining up the pieces of the puzzle to be able to have yourself in a position where you can vet your cases, streamline your investigative operations, and always have that cross-functionality that exists. So great question. We appreciate it. And as always, your insight that you guys provide is always great. It's always good to see you guys. Always good to get the insight. We thank everybody, as always, for tuning into our podcast and giving us these suggestions. We love getting them, and it's great to get this feedback. So as always, you can get our newsletter every Friday right to your inbox at advizehealth.com. Sign up for the newsletter. Also, you can catch our podcast on Spotify and on YouTube. Get it on your drive to work or home from work. And enjoy it for those of you in the government that have now had to go back to your 5 day a week. Here's a great way to spend your time. Catch the podcast. And as always, we enjoy all of the feedback and we'll see you all on the next OIG Roundtable. Take care, everybody.